Radio has changed our lives and possibly saved our lives.
It's politics and more, and it's only on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it.
Radio has changed our lives and possibly saved our lives.
Good morning, Tennessee Valley, and you are tuned in to Politics and More. I'm your host here at Politics and More, Shannon Moore, and we are joined in studio with our co-host today, attorney Chris Pankey. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
All right, let's go to my opening thoughts. This week, we saw the tragic death of a number of American servicemen in Afghanistan. Now, American flags were lowered across the nation as we remember their ultimate sacrifice. Americans should always remember the sacrifices of our soldiers each and every day as they serve our country. Many of them spend months away from home in foreign lands each and every year as they proudly serve this country. Many of the American military risk their lives each and every day when they serve in places like Afghanistan, where so many would wish to do them harm. Now, the tragedy of this week reminds us of the sacrifices that are made by real-life heroes in the face of adversity. The Afghanistan crisis will long be remembered in this country as Americans grapple with the end of our 20-year engagement in that country. It's a stark reminder that the world is a dangerous place with individuals and groups who do not support our ideas of individual freedom and liberty. It's important for Americans to never lose sight of why our liberties are so cherished and why we must speak up when many would happily restrict them. Free speech, freedom of worship, the Second Amendment, the freedom to assemble. Freedoms such as these will be unheard of in a country such as Afghanistan under the rule of the Taliban. And those are my opening thoughts. And, you know, again, Chris, this is a somber week for America as we remember the sacrifices of our American military soldiers, especially those who have passed away this week. And we remember their families who are dealing with this tragedy. And it is a not only a personal tragedy for them, but a national tragedy for our country. And it's a sad ending to our involvement in Afghanistan, which, you know, has been almost 20 years. But I think, especially here in North Alabama, we are very much pro-military, and so many, people we know are either in the military or connected to the military, or there's also even a lot of civilians in this area who work for the Department of Defense. But especially for those men and women who are soldiers and our and protect our country, you know, a lot of them put their lives on the line every day when they serve in countries like Afghanistan.
Well, and the sad thing is, I mean, the reality is we're not ending our engagement in Afghanistan. We're simply ending, you know, this phase, this version of it, because if we just walk away and we no longer are engaged in Afghanistan, we'll have another 9/11 event. I mean, the Taliban will allow ISIS and Al-Qaeda to do whatever they want to do, and you know, if we're not there where we can, you know, knock them down and kill the ones that need to be killed, then they will come here and kill us. So, I mean, that's been my big problem with the way this whole thing has been done. And it was just, you know, a catastrophic, you know, exclamation point on it when, you know, these 13 service members were killed needlessly. I mean, it never should have been going on in such a way to even allow that to happen. I mean, the whole concept of the Taliban is running the checkpoint to make sure that there's nothing coming in to cause harm is just idiotic. I mean, there is no common sense logical explanation where that makes any kind of sense. I mean, honestly, it's just stupid.
Well, there's going to be a lot of looking back at this episode in America's country, and obviously many of us on the right are unhappy with the way that things have wound up in Afghanistan. And I think even many individuals on the left are kind of astounded with how this has kind of happened as well. I mean, it was just something that there's really almost a loss of words for it.
Well, and that's what I was about to say. I don't even think it's a left and right thing. I think it's just an American thing. I mean, it is honestly what is going on right now in Afghanistan is pretty much the first time in my life that I can remember thinking I am embarrassed and ashamed to be an American. I cannot believe we have allowed our country to have leaders in place to make these sorts of decisions. It is an embarrassment. And to me, it is un-American that these sorts of things are going on. Americans don't leave people behind. Americans don't fail to live up to their promises that we've made to these Afghans over 20 years. And never would we knowingly leave American citizens behind enemy lines when we absolutely have the ability to get them out?
Well, I think the question of how many American citizens are still left in Afghanistan, that's unfortunately, it seems very ambiguous right now, because I've seen figures ranging from, I think 1,500 to hundreds to several thousand, and I don't think I'm not sure we actually really have a true number of how many Americans are still in that country and possibly are actually kind of essentially trapped. There is a whole bunch of word semantics about the use of the word stranded, but I think that's pretty much the case, that there are people stranded right now who are American citizens. And I'm just not completely sure anybody has a really good idea of how to remove them in the chaos that has resulted, because essentially the Taliban is now in control of this country.
Well, and I think stranded is a generous term. I mean, honestly, they are in the early stages of a hostage situation is what it is. I mean, you know, once we, quote unquote, pull the military out, they're just going to be at the whim of the Taliban, whether that is to try and, you know, ransom them back to families, or whether it is to slaughter them in internet videos for propaganda purposes. But it's not going to be good, whatever it is, and it never should have been that kind of a situation. We should have known and been able to get every single one of them out and every single one of our Afghanistani allies that worked with us over the years that we promised we would take care of.
And this is, you know, again, it is, if I had to guess, perhaps one of the most complicated and complex situations that our country has been in many years in terms of a foreign policy issue, because again, we've got a self-imposed deadline now that President Biden is not going to try to move whatsoever. But the problem is again, the numbers of how many Americans are still there seems to be in flux, and I'm guessing we just do not have the required intelligence on the ground anymore in some of these cities in Afghanistan, because we're thinking about the capital, Kabul, especially, but, you know, there are other locations in Afghanistan that have been overrun, and so
the whole country.
Yeah, and so we don't actually have that, you know, exact a figure on it. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back more here at Politics and More. Stay tuned. with Politics and More, and I'm Shannon Moore, your host here at Politics and More, joined with our co-host for the day, Attorney Chris Pankey. And if you would like to chime in, our number is 1-866-494-9866. That's 1-866-494-9866. And we've been talking about Afghanistan. That has dominated the headlines in America. It's probably dominated the headlines in a lot across the world. I mean, a lot of allies have been of America have been kind of shocked by the developments as well in Afghanistan and just how quickly, unfortunately, everything unraveled. I think a lot of people saw it could happen, but it has definitely unraveled way faster than anyone could have predicted.
Well, and, you know, that was another thing that just infuriated me, you know, over the past couple of weeks is, you know, there was a point where you had, you know, Great Britain, Germany, France, basically, you know, our oldest, strongest allies, you know, asking us to, you know, extend that, you know, August 31st deadline, you know, our main NATO allies asking us to extend that deadline, and Biden is just saying no. I mean, and there's really no reason other than he's just saying no. I mean, because we should be telling the Taliban, this is what we're doing. This is how long we're going to be here. You know, not, you know, the Taliban saying, well, August 31st is a red line. Who cares if they think it's a red line? I mean, we've killed them before and we should have killed them all.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Obviously, as conservatives, we think that we would not have had this situation if President Trump was still in office. But we are in this right now, and so the question is, you know, what can President Biden do at this point to at least try to ensure that as much as can be salvaged out of this situation? One, I mean, I think that is one of the most important things, is he's got to be very firm with the Taliban about, assuming Americans are left behind, whether purposely or not purposely, if Americans are essentially trapped in Afghanistan after the military pulls out on the 31st, he's got to be firm, and that America will not tolerate any harm befalling any of those who are American citizens.
But who's going to believe any firm statement that he makes?
Well,
about
I understand.
What's going to happen?
I'm just saying, in terms of how this can be at least worked on here.
I mean, you know, it's just. I would say that the best thing that Joe Biden could do is resign, but then you've got President Kamala Harris, which would be even worse probably, because I don't think she's got a clue about anything.
Well, you know, again, it is perhaps one of the most difficult situations that I think America has seen in decades in terms of a foreign policy imbroglio here. And I'm not completely sure how this is going to resolve itself.
Horribly.
Unfortunately, it is, you know, again, perhaps the best thing that Americans can do right now is unite in prayer. We've got, you know, the servicemen who have passed away. We've got their families to think about. And then, again, we still have servicemen in harm's way over there in Afghanistan who are doing their best to, you know, orderly evacuate the country. And, you know, we still have a number of Afghanistan translators and those who supported our U.S. military who America is trying to extract from that country. But the circumstances are obviously seriously grave over there right now.
Well, I mean, it is a horrible situation, but we absolutely 100% did it to ourselves. It's not that the Taliban was stronger and more powerful and better fighters and all of that. That's not true. But we, through stupid decision-making, ignoring the advice of military leaders, ignoring the advice of, you know, the intelligence agencies, the very things that they accused Trump of doing, supposedly. Biden is obviously knowingly doing it. And it's not just, you know, conservatives and Republicans and people on the right that are saying it. I mean, that's not only across the political spectrum in our country, that is across the world being said.
Well, one thing, you know, if we actually, there's going to be a lot of lessons to learn from this, unfortunately. They're tough lessons. But I would say that if we actually considered Biden's leadership style versus Trump's, Trump was very flexible in terms of having to adapt to changing situations. And I think we see President Biden, especially with this August 31st deadline, there's been no room for flexibility on that at all. And that's, I think, one of the places he has made a very big mistake in terms of so strictly adhering to that, that I don't know if Taliban leadership, President Biden said that we would hunt down those terrorists who did this. And we've had a drone strike, I think, against one of the ISIS-K planners yesterday. But by being so inflexible about that deadline, I think it has given the Taliban a lot more room that they probably did not need.
Right. I mean, it would be like, you know, a boxer in a boxing match that, you know, has won, you know, 14 of the 15 rounds. And then, you know, with 12 seconds to go in the end of the 15th round, they just lay down on the mat and say, okay, here. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. I mean, we've given them, you know, $80 billion worth of military equipment to use against us. I mean, we have done basically all the decisions that were made were the exact opposite of what they should have been. I mean, it's just, I'm almost beside myself. I don't think I have ever been so frustrated and angry with the decision making in this country. I mean, I was not an Obama fan. I was, you know, not a fan of, you know, most of, you know, our Democratic leaders, but I have never been as disgusted and frustrated and angry as I am right now over this.
Well, and again, I think it's across all political sides here that the left and the right are kind of united. One, we're united in our concern, I think, for our American troops. I mean, it is an American tragedy. It's not a Republican or Democrat tragedy. It's an American tragedy. And, you know, many on the right, we're upset, obviously, with Biden's leadership on this. But there's also many on the left who are upset.
His complete lack of leadership.
With it as well. But again, I mean, I think one of the lessons we see here is the fact that he is being so inflexible about this deadline and really probably inflexible about how this withdrawal was done in the first place, that's probably maybe for future leaders to see flexibility sometimes in the face of changing circumstances. That's important. President Trump, I do not believe, would have allowed it to get to this level of where quite literally, we are almost at the hands of the Taliban having to retreat out of Afghanistan. It is not an orderly retreat let's call it a withdrawal. It is not an orderly withdrawal from this country. It is quite literally the same thing that President Biden was talking about with the Saigon withdrawal from the Vietnam War. I mean, it's ironic how it is almost, although this would be probably considered worse.
It is worse because, I mean, with Saigon, I mean, there was almost a 2-year period before, you know, the fall of Saigon, you know, and here, I mean, it happened over, you know, a weekend. And so it's just, there's no excuse. There's no justification. It is just ignorance and stupidity. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if Trump had been president, when the military said, you can't, you know, maintain Bagram Air Force Base with 600 troops when that was some arbitrary number that Biden says, I want to draw down to 600, then he wouldn't have done that. I mean, Trump wanted out from the time he became president.
Yeah.
But in the 4 years he was president, yes, there was a drawdown, but he maintained stability.
The flexibility is really, I think, what you're talking about, what I'm kind of mentioning, is just the ability to adapt if situation changes.
And it's the ability to do and have whatever force is needed to control the situation. I mean, and the fact of the matter is, you know, when this, if Trump had been president, when stuff started going bad, he would have brought in the, you know, the airborne, the Rangers.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He would have brought in the troops to take back control.
There would be no having to follow the dictates of the Taliban, because we've got the greatest military in the world, and we would not be doing that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more here at Politics and More. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with Politics and More, and I'm Shannon Moore, your host here at Politics and More, joined with our co-host today, Attorney Chris Pankey. And we've been discussing the Afghanistan tragedy and the continuing crisis in Afghanistan. But there's also some other things we're going to talk about today as well. And one of the interesting stories that I think we're going to see, I mean, obviously it's getting a lot of press, and it's going to be getting more press as we go into September, because I think the election is in mid-September in California, correct? The recall election.
It may be September the 12th.
Yeah. So for a lot of us who love politics and who follow politics closely, the recall election for the governor out there is in full swing. And it's going to be interesting to see how everything plays out in California. Because as we all know, California is a very far left-leaning state, and it has been for quite a long while. And California, as we all know, oftentimes dictates the culture and the entertainment of this country, and so it has a large impact on America. California also has a lot of citizens, gets a lot of electoral votes during the presidential election, but it is, you know, obviously very firmly, very far left leaning in its politics. Perhaps one of the furthest on the political scales in terms of left-leaning in the country. But we have an opportunity to possibly have a Republican elected as governor in California. Larry Elder, a political talk show radio host, although I think he actually has a law degree, doesn't he, Chris?
He does.
So what's your thoughts on where we're going with the California recall election, and where do you think it's heading?
Well, and I just looked. I don't know why I had the 12th in my head. That's actually a Sunday. It's September the 14th. But the thing is it's all mail-in election, and so the 14th is just the deadline date. They've already started voting. So, I mean, there's people already voting now, and you know the Democrats are concerned because they went on this huge attack against Larry Elder. And so, you know, the polls right now are, you know, it's kind of within the margin of error, but I mean, it's basically 50-50 whether or not to recall him, which, considering there's a 2-to-1 Democrat advantage over a Republican, you know, that's a pretty big deal. That means there's lots of Democrats and independents that, you know, don't want Gavin Newsom, you know, as governor. And I think there's several things. I mean, one, I think they're just fed up with the, you know, rules for you but not for me kind of stuff, with, you know, all the mask mandates and different things, and then going out to the restaurant and the, you know, big private group mm-hmm. of people, and, you know, there was a lot of news about that. But I mean, honestly, I think to some degree, you know, the fact that Biden's popularity is tanking, I think that could have an effect.
You think it will impact him?
I think that can have an effect out there, too, because people who were maybe, you know, maybe not, you know, kind of on the fence about the recall and about Newsom, they might be, you know, Newsom, Biden, Democrat, and just say, you know, we're done with this. This is ridiculous. You know, this just, you know, I think maybe there is to some degree an awakening that, you know, these far left liberal crazies are just running the country and the state of California in the ground, and there's just got to be a change.
Well, and, you know, it's always been my contention that the Democrat Party in the last two decades has really shifted. There's just not very many moderate Democrats left. And for the few that are, I mean, they do not have much ability to sway the party anymore. It has consistently gone so far to the left that the Bernie Sanders wing of the party, the Socialist Democrats, as I think he likes to call himself, really are in charge of the national party and really a lot of the state parties throughout the nation. And California may be the best example of that socialist wing of the Democrat Party and the attempt to adopt extremely far-left progressive ideas.
Well, here's another perfect example of that. This week, just a few days ago, Sirhan Sirhan, who assassinated Robert Kennedy in 1968, who has been, you know, in prison since then, has been up for parole numerous times, starting in 1972, and was up as recently as, I think, 2016. Now, because Gascon, who is a George Soros-backed candidate, because he has taken the position that prosecutors cannot oppose parole, and because you had apparently a couple of Kennedy family members say that, you know, it had been long enough, they granted Sirhan Sirhan parole. Mm-hmm. Someone who never should have seen a day outside of prison, now he's being granted parole because of the craziness in California.
Well, a lot of the policies and laws that have come into existence in California over the last couple of decades are kind of coming to fruition in terms of what could have been expected. One, we have a tremendous homeless problem that has developed in California. And we've all seen the pictures that homelessness has become a bigger and bigger problem. Housing in California has become extremely expensive. One, the way I understand it is it's harder to build lower cost housing because there's just so many regulations in California. I mean, there, you know, this is what happens when you have far left progressives. A lot of them love regulations and they will regulate almost all aspects of life. And so the housing industry in California, I mean, there's just not a lot of low-cost housing there anymore. It is extremely expensive to build or buy a home in California. And so you're seeing more and more people squeezed out of home ownership. And, you know, you've got this developing homeless crisis. You've got a rising crime rate in California because, again, they have gotten more and more left-leaning in terms of you know, whether to prosecute individuals or not for especially for lower grade crimes, I guess. And that's all going to be factoring into this recall election. Now, the question will be, is this a referendum on some of these far left politics that have kind of captured California, or is it just going to be a referendum on Newsom himself?
Well, I don't really know how you can separate it. I mean, I guess he may not, but
he's not the most popular person right now.
Right. I mean, I think there is some, you know, personal dislike of Newsom as a person, not just as a governor. And so I think there's an element of that, but I think he is kind of the, you know, ultimate symbol for that, you know, far left agenda. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's been his agenda forever. And so I think people are just finally seeing this kind of poor policy is affecting my life.
Yeah.
It is harming me, and I have got to do something different.
Well, it will be interesting to see the results of this, because we're always going to be a country that's going to have two parties. I mean, that will always be the case, a Democrat and Republican party. But will some of these policies push the Democrat party back toward a more moderate stance, or is that progressive far left wing going to continue to essentially dominate the Democrat party? And in California, again, California is, I mean, it could essentially be its own country, but it is a country that is now firmly in that far, far left political majority. And a lot of these policies are now, they're bearing fruit in the sense that California is actually losing population. I think in the census, the most recent census, they actually lost population. I don't think that's actually ever happened. I think we talked about it here on the show a number of months ago, the first time this has actually ever happened in California history. But people are actually realizing, or maybe they're not, I hope they are, realizing that some of these far-left policies, they're not good for the majority of people. They are hurting small business. They are hurting families. They've allowed crime to kind of get out of hand. They've helped create a homeless problem that's not going away. And so, you know, Larry Elder, he's making a lot of good political points about this. He is within a possibility. He could become, you know, the first Republican governor in California since Schwarzenegger.
Right. I mean, the only thing that I'm concerned about, you know, if that happens, I mean, I think he would be a great governor, but you've still got a far left legislature.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is an issue that is, you know, unfortunately it would still exist. You don't, you know, have to see more and more Republicans, or at least moderate Democrats, if they still are out there in California, run to replace some of these extremely far left progressives. But, you know, the governor's race, this recall election is, I think, tightening, and it's going to be interesting to see if the far left can drum up enough support to keep their governor in.
Well, I mean, they've certainly got a shot simply because with it being all mail-in balloting, I mean, they can just ballot harvest like crazy. And, you know, we saw what happened with the presidential election. So,
yeah, that's, you know, again, one of the things that I've pushed is we have to ensure that elections are fair, but that they are also secure, and that people who shouldn't be voting who are not eligible to vote should not vote, and that there's not things like you said, ballot harvesting, because we know mail-in balloting is ripe for fraud.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's why, you know, it's not going to surprise me, you know, if the recall fails. But, you know, if you believe the polls at all, I mean, they're really, Newsom should be out.
Yeah, so we're going to see how that goes, and in just a couple of weeks, they're going to be voting there in California. And, you know, the far left is, they're coming out and claiming that, you know, Larry Elder's, as they always often do, he's too extreme for California. But it's, you know, whether those scare tactics work or not, we're going to see. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more here at Politics and More. Stay tuned. Back with Politics and More. I'm your host here at Politics and More, Shannon Moore, and I'm going to turn it over to our co-host, today, Chris Pankey, to talk about something a little bit more lighter. Of course, that's sometimes relative, but Chris, take it away.
Well, I mean, you know, it is the start of, you know, college football season, and that is something that most of the time, you know, brings a lot of people together, even though, you know, there's rivalries and that sort of thing. So, you know, there's been huge news. I mean, we've talked about some of it over the past few weeks about, you know, at some point, don't know exactly when, Oklahoma and Texas will be joining the SEC. Most likely we're going to have, you know, college football playoff expansion. This past week we had Big Ten, Pac-12, and ACC announce a quote-unquote alliance, whatever that means. So there's been, you know, and not to mention the huge change of name, image, and likeness, you know, coming to college sports, which really changes, I mean, even so much that we had you know, a high school senior reclassify so he could go ahead and join the Ohio State Buckeyes and take advantage of the fact that, you know, he had all these NIL opportunities being thrown his way. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, really changes things. So, you know, with all those things out there, Kelsey, is there anything in particular that kind of jumps out at you as what you think might be the biggest topic or biggest story headed into this college football season?
I think it's more of a what the name, image, and likeness is going to bring. Is it going to have off the field issues, like players, and you know, it's going to be kind of selfishness between players. Some players are jealous or something like that. I think that'll play a part in the football season.
Right. You know, and it's interesting that you said that because, I mean, obviously there can be some selfishness and jealousy, but one story that I saw that I was really kind of impressed with is, JT Daniels, who's the Georgia quarterback, said that he was going to give half of his NIL amongst the team. So, I mean, he was only going to keep half of whatever he got, and the other half he was going to spread out amongst the team, which I thought that was an impressive way. And to me, that shows the kind of leadership you want in a quarterback.
Yeah, it was great what JT Daniels did. And I think, you know, if that would happen, if that's going to happen more often, I think that's a great way of looking how this thing is going to go. But, the reality is it won't happen all the time. But, as it did in this instance, you're right. It did show a lot of leadership qualities that JT Daniels has, and it's because he doesn't need any issues with his wide receivers or anybody on that team, his O-line, as he's going to head into the season. He's a Heisman candidate favorite. He is this Georgia Bulldog team that might be fighting for, you know, they're expected to be in the college football playoff this year if they can do it or not, and if even not, I mean. Kirby Smart, if he doesn't win a national championship this year, do you think he goes in the hot seat?
Well, I think there may be some heat. I mean, I think it would be hard to be to the hot seat to the point of getting rid of him just yet. But, you know, it's going to be an odd year because you've got all these super seniors and everything is just a little bit different. You know, you've still got pandemic issues going on. I mean, if, you know, there's been all this talk about, you know, if a team has COVID issues, there's not going to be postponements and rescheduling. It's just going to be a forfeit. I mean, so there's things that are still crazy and out of control this year that I don't think, you know, his job's at any sort of risk. But I do think you could start seeing some heat if there's not, you know, an exceptional year out of Georgia because everybody's picking them to win the East. So they're expected to be in the SEC championship game. And of course, you know, early on, they've got a huge game with Clemson. So, I mean, that's going to say a lot for both those schools. Now, I think either one of those schools could lose that game and still wind up in the playoff if that's the only game they lose because they're both top five teams. I mean, everybody knows that. But, you know, it does make it a little bit more difficult if Georgia drops that game, I think. I think it does more harm to Georgia to lose that game than it does Clemson.
I agree with that, saying that the Clemson, in their conference, you know, it's not that hard to win their conference. They'll have a couple issues this year, but as long as they get that conference and they lose that game and they take their conference, I think they'll be fine. I think they'll make college football playoff, especially if it's a loss this early in the season. I think it'll turn out fine for them. Another topic I want to touch on today is Ed Orgeron. I mean, he's kind of in a weird situation. You know, he had probably one of the best teams of all time just a couple of years ago, and now he's stuck to where he could be on the hot seat this year if he doesn't take this LSU team to the next level like they were a couple of years ago. Chris, what do you think about that? What do you think about Ed Orgeron maybe being fired after the season, or could be?
Well, I mean, I understand where that's coming from. And if they have a year like last year, yes, he's definitely got huge issues. But I think LSU's going to have a strong bounce back. I mean, they're not going to be anywhere near the team they were in 2019. But it would not surprise me for them to have, you know, a 10-win or better season. I mean, they could certainly do that. Because, I mean, there were several people you know, that they had that opted out last year, and so that hurt them. You know, they had some injuries and that sort of thing. And they have had some issues even this year with quarterback. So, but I think they have got so much talent. I really expect a big bounce back from them this year. And I think that will do a lot to kind of keep him from being on too much of a hot seat.
Well, LSU is kind of in the same situation with talent. They have young talent. They haven't really put it to use yet. They're kind of in the same situation as Texas A&M, who has a lot of young talent, and Jalen Weidermeyer, Isaiah Spiller, and they're both on the same kind of tier right now because we don't really know what they're going to do. They could have a 10-win season, or they could have a 3-win season. We just don't know if this talent is going to perform or not, and that's going to be a big difference in this next upcoming season is how these teams perform, and it's going to affect a lot of things. I mean, what do you think about Texas A&M, Chris?
I think they'll have a good year. You know, I've even seen some that predict Texas A&M to beat Alabama this year, which, I mean, you know, other than just saying it's Nick Saban and you know they're always going to be good, you don't really know what Alabama's got this year because, I mean, you know, Bryce Young hadn't seen, you know, real action. You don't know if he's going to live up to the hype. You certainly hope that he does. And if he does, I mean, they could have another fantastic year. But if he's not quite where he needs to be yet, they could lose a couple of games. So, I mean, that's going to be, you know, interesting to see what happens there. But I think, you know, Texas A&M, I mean, they had Kellen Mond is quarterback for practically a decade, so now, you know, that's going to be a huge change for him there.
All right. Well, I appreciate y'all's discussion here, and we always appreciate all listeners who tune in every week here at Politics and More. Everyone, have a great weekend. We'll be back next week here at Politics and More. Same time, same channel.